Time for another team that I intentionally delayed until the end of the preseason because they're perhaps the league's most interesting preseason team, the Philadelphia 76ers, or Philadelphia Sixers, as it actually says on NBA.com, which just it does not sound right to me, does it, Derek?
No, it doesn't. It's funny because 90% of what I write will say Sixers and 90% of what I say will say 76ers. So it is it's an interesting team name for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're just saying the Sixers, that's cool. But if you're going to say Philadelphia Sixers, that just like that doesn't work. Like you have to, if you're saying the full name, you got to say the full name.
100% on board. I agree with you.
I think really that's probably the reason for their terrible record the last 3 years. All right. So the things I wanted to most talk to you about, number one is how Joel Embiid has looked in the preseason. That's why we delayed this podcast until now. I was actually going to have you on a month ago. And then I apologized and slapped myself in the head because I realized that a Sixers podcast would be useless without that information. So I'll cede it to you. How's he looked?
He has looked better. And I'm very glad that you did delay it because he has looked better than really anybody had any reasonable expectation to believe he would. I mean, for a guy who basically played a cup of coffee in high school, played 26 or whatever games at Kansas, and then took a 2.5 year layoff, for him to be showing what he's been, and look, I think he has like a 37% usage rate so far in the preseason, which is astronomical. I think it bumps up to like 40% over the last four games, and he's doing so pretty efficiently, mostly because he's getting the foul line a ton. But it's pretty clear that right now Brett wants to get as many possessions out of him as he can because he is on that minutes restriction, and you kind of expect for that to drop when he's playing more steady minutes. But I mean, just going past the sheer numbers, some of the instincts he has on the defensive side of the court are things that you just can't teach. And the rotations he's made and the way he keeps his head up on a swivel and really surveys the entire floor, how quickly he processes information, and just the fluidity that he moves, it's been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, he's averaging only 14.1 minutes in the preseason, but has been starting, and they've been posting him up a ton. They've really been going there. He's taken a few threes. I think he's probably only hit one of them, but you know, showing some good range there. And then, as you said, I think the defense is what I've been most encouraged by. Do you foresee that his role is going to change a little bit in the regular season?
You know, like I said, I do think his usage is going to drop a little bit, but I don't think it's going to change too dramatically because they just don't have any other real options. I mean, they don't have any guard play that is going to really create opportunities either for perimeter shooters or for big men. The only change is going to be integrating Jahlil Okafor into that lineup, and Brett Brown has said that Okafor won't start day one, that they won't start those two together. So Okafor is going to be more attacking big men off the bench. So no, I don't think it's going to change too dramatically. I think one thing, when you looked at his first game against the Celtics, and as he's progressed through the preseason, it hasn't been quite as many straight post-ups. Like the Celtics game, it was a post-up pretty much every time down the floor he was trying to get position and they were clearing out for him. They have done a little bit more trying to get him the ball on the move, a little bit more cutting the basket, a little more on pick and rolls, and I hope that they integrate that a little bit more. But even there, they just don't have many guards who are capable of running that. I mean, Sergio Rodriguez, in theory, is the one who can, but he's really struggled with the shot so far in the preseason. He can't get by NBA defenders off the dribble unless they are respecting that jump shot, unless they are trying to go over the pick and roll. So if he's not hitting that shot, you just don't know how much his teammates can really create for him. But yeah, they've got to get him the ball deeper in the post. They've got to get to him on the move. But more or less, I think he is going to be the focal point of the offense from day one, even in the regular season.
Yeah, I do think that the post-ups, he's going to struggle to be efficient on, like, you know, basically 99% of the NBA at this point. Just doing a straight post-up against a like-sized player is not going to be particularly efficient. I mean, can you allow me? Is 22 now. There's not much to go on here, but if you wanted to talk about what you think he can eventually be, and perhaps if it's a different answer, what he will eventually be, assuming that the health issues, knock on wood, continue to be okay, what would you say you see it as?
Yeah, the post game is interesting because on the one hand, he's turned the ball over on over 35% of his post ups so far.
He's getting stripped down low all the time, even on dump offs too, which you would expect be from the layoff. He's used to going against a chair. He's not used to actually having guys around. And you know, when you go against a chair, you bring it down, you try to dunk, like you're not as defensive with the ball as you need to be.
Sure. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, his shooting and post ups right over 40%. A lot of that he settled for jump shots early on in the season. But I think when he's really put his mind to it, he's made some really good post moves over guys like Gortat, over guys like Drummond and Boban and some really quality post defenders and some big strong guys, and he's had some success with that. I think this is one of those things in terms of his post up where he's going to show incredible potential down the line, but until he really gets accustomed to the speed and size of the game, he's probably going to settle for some things he shouldn't. He's probably going to turn the ball over more than he should, but I think he has a lot of real potential in that regard. You know, but I do think he also, the great thing about Embiid is he has that, but he can also step out to the three-point line. Like you said, he hit one, he had his foot on the line on another, and he's had a couple of pump fakes on the perimeter where he's gotten his defender in the air and actually driven the ball, one for a layup, a couple of fouls, which has been really intriguing. He's shown real promise as a role man. He can crash the offensive glass. He just has a real diversity in his offensive game where if he doesn't have a matchup that he can exploit in the post, he has other ways that he's going to attack you. You know, I do think he can develop into a number one type option while still being a dominant defensive rebounder. I think his defensive rebounding rate is right up at like 27 or 28% so far this preseason. Who can average, you know, 2 to 3 blocks per game, and who can really defend the pick and roll and switch on occasion on the perimeter. He had, you know, a couple of series against guys like John Wall where when you're watching him as a 7'2", 280 pound guy, he shouldn't be keeping up with him the way that he is, but he has really good foot speed on the perimeter and he moves his body really well for his size and weight. He, in a league that has obviously gone away from the big man, at least in terms of having two of them on the court and in terms of running their offense through them, he has, it almost to me makes having a versatile big man even more important, because you're not going to have two traditional big men on the court. The one that you do have has to be a dominant rebounder. He has to be able to rotate defensively and block shots, and he has to have gravity in the post and around the rim, and I think he can really develop into that.
Yeah, I think that's right. One of the things that I've liked a lot from him too is, and he even got a couple of kind of BS offensive fouls doing this in the Cavs game, but he will go hard to get post-ups right at the rim, especially when he has smaller players on him. I think that can be really effective as well. And frankly, even if the straight post-ups, you know, where you're catching the ball 15 feet from the basket and backing down, his passing obviously is a long, long way to go as well after the layoff. But I think he really, even if that post-up doesn't happen, all of the skills that you talked about, he could be really, really effective, especially once they get some better guys in there who can get him the ball. I mean, even if he's just only scoring and pick and pop, being a good role guy, hitting the offensive glass, and then being, you know, one of the better defensive centers in the league, that's still an extremely valuable player. And I do think he has the upside from what we've seen, even if the post game doesn't come around, to be one of the best centers in the league. I'd say, I mean, the only thing that I've been a little bit bothered by is that he's not that explosive, you know, unless he's really in space. You know, I think he kind of struggles to finish a little bit when he's getting bodied up, but that's nitpicking. And I think, aside from the health questions, you have to feel very good about where he is at. I don't know if he's going to be a 28% usage superstar, but that's okay. He can still be one of the best centers in the NBA because that's not really what centers do anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to say because he took so long off. And even like you say, the explosiveness, and I agree, he's not certainly what he was at Kansas. I mean, he's also put on 40 pounds of muscle since then and had a 2.5-year layoff with a pretty major injury. So who knows if maybe that's just getting caught back up to the speed of the game too, and these movements that he hasn't really done at full speed in quite some time come back to him. But even just the fact that he's being used like this, the fact that he is, they're giving him the ball and trusting him that much, considering the layoff and considering the flashes, like I said, he has shown, the fact that he can't really do it consistently right now concerns me less than the fact that he is doing it at all. And I think he's showing quite a bit of growth potential.
What's the plan as far as the minutes limit, back-to-backs, you know, that kind of stuff? What's the plan to try and keep him healthy?
Yeah, well, right now they're saying he played, I think, about 19 minutes in his last preseason game, which was the most that he's played. They originally said they want him about 20 to 24 minutes when the season started. And originally, over the summer, it sounded like back-to-backs were off the table and he was going to rest during those, but it sounds like they're reevaluating that as well. You know, a lot of the concern right now isn't really about the structural integrity of the foot. It's just getting him back up to game speed to the point where he can play 25 minutes without really, you know, getting tired. And a lot of times you see with these injuries, a re-injury comes, you know, when they are tired and when they're not, maybe when they're trying to take shortcuts and they're not giving 100% effort and they're a little sloppy, quite frankly. And it's just getting him back up to there, and he's looked a lot better better over the past week than he did at the beginning of camp and the beginning of preseason. So I could see that, you know, that 24 minutes growing a little bit. I mean, he could be playing 26, 28, 30 minutes sometime in January or February. I don't think that's off the table.
So let's turn to Ben Simmons now. Obviously, the injury that he had, Jones fracture to his right foot, is very disappointing. We heard a number of sky is falling, woe is Sixers thoughts. Not these guys, not the Sixers, was like Woj's piece. How worried are you about this injury and what the effect that it could be on Simmons in the long term?
Yeah, well, I mean, with a guy at, again, 6'10", 245, 250 pounds, whenever you have a foot injury, how could you not be worried about the future? It would be disingenuous to say that you're not. But I think the fact that it was, you know, an acute fracture and not a stress fracture seems to lend itself to better recovery. You know, I think a lot of the problems that you see with guys like
Kevin... And by acute, what you mean is...
It happened...
One specific event, he stepped on somebody's foot, rolled his ankle, and that's what caused it, as opposed to just something inherent in his gait that caused it to build up over time.
Right, or repeated stress or something that wasn't diagnosed a long time ago. Exactly. It happened as a result of rolling his ankle. A lot of the ones that you see where there are recurrences and struggles to get back, like Kevin Durant, they are stress fractures that build up over time. So I think that lends itself well. The Sixers are obviously going to be very cautious and very slow moving in bringing him back because of that. You know, there was obviously that report then that somebody doesn't believe that Ben Simmons' agent will let him play this year. It didn't come from Ben Simmons, didn't come from an agent, didn't come from his team. I would kind of be surprised if that happens. But I do think, you know...
And that would be stupid by them, by the way, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a little overboard.
If you want to take 3 months instead of the normal two to get back from the Jones fracture, that I get. But I mean, when he's cleared, he's cleared. You know, I think that there's playing it conservative, and then there's going, six times past the normal time frame.
Right.
That's getting a little ridiculous.
No, I agree with that. And everyone I've talked to, all the orthopedic surgeons I've talked to, and I've talked to a couple, say this is basically a 10 to 12 week injury. And at that point, the structural integrity of it is back. It's either back or it isn't. And it's either, you know, healed or there's a setback. And at that point, it's getting the muscles around it back up, getting rid of the atrophy and getting back up to NBA game speed. So if they want to take, like you said, 3 months, maybe even a little more, push it to the All-Star break, even going ultra conservative, that's as far as I can see. But on the guy like Ben Simmons, you know, I think he's competitive enough and he wants to prove himself enough. You know, this is a rookie entering his rookie season. I think he wants to get back out on the court. I would be very surprised if that actually came to be where he missed the entire season.
So where do you see him as, just from a skill standpoint? We obviously haven't seen him at all in the preseason because he hurt himself pretty early on, but just what do you think we can expect from him once he is back on the court based on what we saw perhaps in summer league and his college career?
Yeah, well, I mean, his real elite skill is passing and playmaking. And I think everybody saw that leading up to the draft and all throughout training camp. You know, he got injured on the last scrimmage of training camp, which is kind of where that kick comes in, as Sixers fans feel. But he was basically running the offense. And for all the hand wringing over whether or not he is a point guard or a power forward, he is going to initiate much of the Sixers half court offense when he's on the court. And I think that was a big blow for them. I think it's a big blow for a guy like Joel Embiid. You know, we just talked about how they need to do a better job of getting him the ball on the move. And a guy who could do that really was Ben Simmons. So I think when he comes back, he is going to be initiating the offense, running a lot of pick and rolls, leading the team in transition. And I think one of the things that you really saw in summer league and a little bit in training camp was that he can make an impact defensively, not necessarily in the shutdown defender type category, but he does have the quickness to switch on the perimeter a little bit. He has quick hands and can force turnovers, which is something the Sixers really need, because
better natural anticipation. Like, he's one of those guys where if you have a fast break going at him, you still got to be defensive because he can pick off one of those passes that come out of nowhere. Just the way he anticipates is fantastic. It's just the effort, I think, especially based on his performance at LSU, is really, I think, more the impediment, especially, I think, over, you know, he was better in summer league at times and impressive moving his feet and actually getting into a stance for the first time in his career. But over the course of a long NBA season, you have to expect that it's going to take him a while to learn to really dial up the intensity to where it needs to be on a nightly basis.
Yeah, but I think the Sixers will need that anticipation to get out on the break, because they're not going to do a whole lot in the half court. But, you know, there's really nobody on the team right now who has both the athleticism to break the defender down and get in the paint, and also the vision to then do something with that. And this offense is going to be really difficult to watch at times. And I think he will help that. The question is obviously always going to come down to not only that defensive effort, which I agree with you on, but that jump shot and whether or not he can make anybody even care about him when he's playing on the pick and roll or on the perimeter. And that's going to be a big focus over the next 3 months when he has a lot of downtime. They had a couple of guys now. They have a little bit too much experience in trying to do this with rookies. You know, Nerlens Noel obviously didn't make nearly as much progress in that jump shot. Joel Embiid, on the other hand, did. So whether or not they can get him, you know, they've talked openly about reworking his jump shot and rebuilding his jump shot. So how much progress they can make is going to be a really big determining factor on his early career success.
I think actually almost as big of a thing for him, and actually for those who are interested, Danny and I did a long podcast where we talked about everyone that we saw in summer league back.
You going
in July.
With his left hand?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think that's almost more important than the jump shot in some ways, because he goes left and then he just will not just shoot a normal left-handed layup or a little hook shot. He's got to figure out how to do that as well. He always brings it back to his right hand despite nominally being left-handed. All right, we'll get into some of the other newcomers in a moment, but first this word.
So if you'd like to manage your money a bit more like the Hawks or the Warriors, and perhaps less like some of the less frugal teams that we've seen, you should consider Betterment. Betterment is a great way to go. You can learn more about them at betterment.com/capspace. They are the largest independent automated investing service out there. One of the great products they have is Smart Deposit. If you're someone who has a variable income, what it can do is take money out of your account once you get above a certain preset limit. So if you feel like you need to have $5,000 in your account just to be safe, anytime your balance goes above $5,000, you can set it so that it'll invest that money for you automatically. That's just one of the smart services that they have. And Betterment is at a lower cost than more traditional financial services. More than 150,000 customers choose Betterment's advanced advice algorithms and beautiful user interface to manage over $4 billion of their dollars. Again, you can get started with them and in saving for your retirement or other financial goals with 6 months of no fees at betterment.com/capspace. That's betterment.com/capspace. Betterment, investing made better.
All right, so they also brought in plenty of other firepower. Well, maybe not firepower, but bodies. Some might say firepower implies offensive acumen. Let's start with Sergio Rodriguez. You talked about him a little bit. He's on a one-year, $8 million deal. I liked that signing. He is someone who can operate in the pick and roll, but he's struggled to score. At this point, it seems like the plan is to bring him off the bench, which is actually the role that he played for Real Madrid low these many years.
Yeah, he started off the preseason off the bench. He played the last preseason game as a starter. I think Brett Brown just wants to get some different looks in there. He's a real interesting piece because he is a legitimately elite passer and he has a real NBA skill. The question is whether or not the rest of his game is going to allow him to really be effective. And he has a lot of wiggle with the dribble. He changes direction and speed pretty well, but he's just at such an athletic disadvantage that whether or not, you know, he can really create at a high level is going to be something to watch. I mean, he needs, like I said earlier, he needs those defenders to go over that pick and roll and really respect that jump shot, because that is his real calling card in terms of NBA impact. He's going to struggle mightily defensively. He got into a couple of bad isolation situations with John Wall earlier, and he's just not going to win those battles. So for him to be a real viable, you know, fringe starter, because we are talking about the Sixers, or backup point guard, you know, he's going to have to be effective in that pick and roll. And so far he has struggled a little bit, but he also does then show you that sign, that court vision and creativity that this team just lacks. So I think especially when you're trying to develop a big man, I look at him almost, and I think Brett Brown likes TJ McConnell's defense, or at least his defensive effort, and he might start him because of there. I would try to pair Embiid and Rodriguez as much as I can, because I think he could help Embiid quite a bit.
Yeah, Rodriguez is the kind of guy that if they had signed him the last couple of years, someone along those lines, just even if he can't defend any at all, just someone who can run a pick and roll, provide some sort of offensive impetus. And I think actually Rodriguez, I think his jumper will come around. He's been good in Europe with that. And at least he can hit it on long twos enough that if you go under, maybe the 3-point line is going to be a little bit of an adjustment. But I mean, I think he can be a solid NBA offensive point guard. He has the limitations, obviously, that you talked about on the defensive end. But if they had just signed someone like him the last couple of years with all their space, just to have somebody who could make him a little bit more respectable, and then they brought in Ish Smith to do that as the Hinkie era was winding down, maybe Sam would still have a job. I thought that that was an oversight and that he can help the young players develop. They also brought in Jared Bayless and Gerald Henderson. What are those guys going to bring for the Sixers this year?
Yeah, well, Bayless right now, he is trying to return back from a sore wrist, and he hasn't played at all this preseason, and he's not expected to be ready for the season opener. You know, but in theory, he is, you know, he was brought in for his catch and shoot shooting, and I think he was one of the top three or four in that last year. He's been a little up and down in his career, but he was a guy who really, I thought, was brought in to fit around Ben Simmons and play off the ball and play in a world where Ben Simmons is really your point guard, and Jared Bayless is more.
And I love that approach too. I think there may be better guys you could have done that with, or shorter contracts you could have done that with than Bayless, perhaps.
Yeah, I think the third year was probably a little more than you need to give out. But I mean, in theory, he would have been playing off the ball but defending ones, and I think that would have been a good fit. But the problem now comes that he's going to be asked to be more of an initiator in the half court, and that's never really been his game. And whether or not he can do that with any level of success is going to be important. But again, even just adding his catch and shoot shot in a world where you're going to run a lot of your offense now around Ben Simmons, or around Joel Embiid rather than Ben Simmons, that can be helpful. It's just you wish the Sixers at this point had some perimeter shot creation. But again, it's hard to really fault them too much because they thought that was going to be Ben Simmons.
Yeah, and then Henderson, I thought that was an excellent contract. Basically 2 years, $18 million, second year, non-guaranteed. How much of him taking that contract was just wanting to come back to Philly, do you think? Or were there just no other offers out there? Because I was like, so many of these other teams should have tried to sign him and maybe even beaten that offer. But if he really wanted to come back to Philly, maybe that wasn't realistic.
Yeah, no, I think he likes coming back to Philly where his father played. I think that was certainly a part of the equation. And I think also, you know, he knew he had a chance to start, a really good chance to start, obviously, and be a pretty big part in the offense. And taking what is essentially, I think, going to be a 1 year deal because of that option in a situation where he could be a pretty high usage part of the team, I think that probably had some appeal to him as well. He's been
I don't think it's going to be 1 year because it's non-guaranteed in favor of the team. So, I mean,
is it? Okay. I was thinking option, but if it's non-guaranteed.
Yeah, no. If it were a player option, I would understand it a little bit more, but yeah, it's actually non-guaranteed, so he's going to be around next year unless he just really disappoints you would have to imagine.
Yeah, no, and then that's perfectly reasonable. But either way, I think he wanted to be a big part of the offense, and so far I think he's struggled a little bit. He has, you know, had that nagging hip problem, and his minutes have been limited because of that. His offense just hasn't been there. He hasn't been able to create yet. His perimeter jump shots haven't really been falling, but in theory he's a guy, I mean, he's worked hard over the last couple of years to extend his range and make the three-point game a bigger part of his arsenal. He's a good defender. He can go out there and have an impact on both sides of the ball, which is something the Sixers just haven't had on the wings over the last few years. When you look at, again, in a world dominated by Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, I thought he could have been a piece. But like everything else, there's a trickle-down effect to Simmons going out where these guys might now have to try to do more than they otherwise would have. And I think he could be put in some, you know, asked to maybe do a little bit more than he's capable of. But I think once he gets back into shape and in the flow of things, I think he's going to be a solid contributor.
Yeah, and maybe that hip part of what explains the lack of interest in him this year, which Good. Is something, frankly, I probably should have considered more. That, you know, he has had, I think, two surgeries on his hip now. Another guy, Dario Saric, who at one point looked like he might be a little bit redundant with Simmons, although Saric probably not going to be a guy who runs too much pick and roll necessarily. But I think is he going to start for these guys, you think, at power forward?
It looks like it. You know, when Simmons went down, that was one of the first questions asked was, were you going to go back to a traditional two big lineup, or were you going to go with Dario? And initially it was Dario, and part of that was because neither Noel, who is out with a sore groin, or Okafor were ready to go. Okafor was still, he experienced some soreness at the end of training camp from the meniscus surgery he had over at the end of last season, over back in March. So he announced Dario, and he was really happy, it seemed, Brett, that he had more of a traditional, well, what is now a traditional, you know, face up, floor spacing, power forward, more of a passer from the perimeter, and he could run, you know, a little bit more of a four out system. That would be assuming that the other three perimeter players could actually hit a shot. I guess in theory, a four out system, but a little bit more spacing in the front court. And just yesterday, when Okafor practiced for the first time since training camp, one of the questions was, well, will Okafor start on opening night? And no, he wouldn't. And the follow-up...
Yeah, so what was that? Start with Embiid? Right. Okafor and Embiid? Yeah, right. No, they're not going to do that.
Well, and then the follow-up question was then, is that temporary because Okafor's just trying to get back? And he said, you know, he doesn't know. But he really seemed to imply that he wants to bring Okafor off the bench, and they will get time together because it's almost impossible not to, because eventually they're both going to be playing heavy minutes, but he really wants to pick his matchup. So yeah, it seems like Saric is going to start, and I think Brett really is looking forward to having that kind of perimeter focused four.
Yeah, for me, Saric has impressed on just in terms of his skill level. I think his jump shot, at least his willingness to take it, he's a little bit further along. He kind of shoots a flat shot though, and just subjectively, I've noted that guys who shoot a flatter shot, I think, have a little bit more trouble of moving it out to the NBA 3-point line from either college or in FIBA. But you know, he is willing to take it. He's willing to take shots off the dribble. He is a wonderful passer. You know, he'll just catch the ball on the baseline and find guys cutting to the rim. Or you know, I think that aspect is something that's going to be sorely needed. And he also plays hard. You know, he likes to post up. He's physical. Even though he's not like the absolute strongest guy yet. But, you know, I do wonder whether he's going to be able to be efficient at all this year. And I would imagine that, well, he's going to show some flashes and he's going to try to do a lot of things and be versatile, that he's probably not going to actually like be able to be efficient at all the things that he's versatile at.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And like you said at the beginning, while there's some overlap in skill sets with Simmons, he's certainly not going to be initiating. He's more of a secondary playmaker. His shot has started off strong in the preseason. I think he's missed his last seven from deep, though. And athleticism-wise, there's going to be quite the adjustment. And that's both offensively in terms of creating off the dribble, and certainly defensively, where I actually think fundamentally his rotations are solid. He's just overmatched at times. So I agree with you that he's going to flash skills. He's going to stylistically play in a manner that's very, very compatible with Joel Embiid. But his overall effectiveness, I mean, I think there's part of it that's just the transition to the NBA. And part of it that is the, you know, the athletic disadvantage that he's at. I think he's going to be fun to watch. But I agree, in terms of impact, it's probably going to take him a little bit of time to really figure out what he can and can't do and how to be most effective.
Yeah, I mean, the big problem for him is that he can't jump, especially off of 2 feet, like a lot of European guys. I mean, if he gets a head of steam up, he can maybe go in and dunk off of 1 foot. But yeah, I mean, when he's trying to finish around the rim or block some shots, I mean, he did have that one crazy block in the Olympics.
Against Gasol.
Against Gasol, but I mean, he's got to really load up, you know, and he's not someone who's got like quick pop as an athlete. So I think that's going to be a little bit of a problem for him. But I mean, do you see him? Is he someone who can be like a starter in the league long term? Do you foresee that for him, or is he going to be more a guy who comes off the bench and can just give you some additional playmaking?
Yeah,
I mean, obviously very early to say, but you know, what's the point of these podcasts if we're not going to speculate?
Right. What's the point of a season preview? Yeah. No, I think he is more of a six-man first big off the bench type. Come in again when the matchups dictate, and he maybe has a better chance of defending his matchup, and also give you a boost off the bench. You know, I think long term, Simmons is your starter at power forward, at least defending power forwards, being the second tallest guy on the court. And I think Saric will come in and spell that. Maybe they play a little bit together because Simmons, in theory, does have that jump shot, and he made a lot of progress over with Efes overseas in that jump shot. You know, like you said, I think there's going to be some adjustment there, but in theory, if that jump shot does translate, maybe they could play a little bit, because I think Simmons could spend at least some time defending small forwards, even if I don't think it's his best position. But I think by and large, Saric is a first big off the bench six man type when the Sixers do finally get healthy.
All right, we don't need to spend maybe quite as much time on him, but Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot, is that how he wants to be referred to?
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So he early in the draft process, it was just Luwawu, the Cabarrot. I think it came in later. But is he going to play at all this year? Do you think, is he even like remotely ready, or is he just going to kind of be you know, spending a lot of time in Delaware and that's about it?
Well, no, he's not ready, but I think he might get some time. You know, I think Brett, I think the assumption was that he would spend almost the entire season in Delaware, and Brett came out and was pretty emphatic that he was surprised by Luwawu-Cabarrot, I guess you would want to say both, and also that, you know, he wasn't just going to, he was going to be playing up here in the NBA. You know, I still do think the game,
by the way, it's gotta be TLC, right? Can we start calling him that, or is he not good enough yet to deserve like
no, that has has caught on in the Philadelphia area. Absolutely. You know, he needs a lot of work, and he's a guy who is athletic. He shows a willingness to defend. He made some progress in his jump shot, even though it's really streaky still. So you look at that and you think he has 3-and-D potential, but his ability to process information has to catch up to that. And part of that, you know, his ball handling is really far behind, but also part of that is just processing information, making correct decisions. And right now he looks a little bit overwhelmed from a mental aspect in terms of the rotations he has to make and attacking closeouts and, you know, worrying about how the defense rotates over to him. He is going to require some time. And I think everybody kind of realized that, you know, he was a guy, he's 21, but he came on real late. Just 18 months ago, he was playing in second division France, which is not necessarily the greatest preparation for the NBA. He's an athlete, and playing for Megalex last year kind of masked some of that because they really let them play like that in a style that worked there. But I think he's going to take some time until he's ready. I do like him. I think Brett Brown likes him. I think the Sixers like him. But I wouldn't expect a whole lot of day one contributions.
Normally, I would say, all right, who are the players who are going to get better? Who are the regression candidates? I think we are, other than Bayless, maybe. I mean, his three-point shooting was crazy last year. I think he shot like 43% or something. I would expect that to decline, both due to being on the Sixers and also just it's really tough. He's not like that good of a pure shooter. But I don't see any other regression candidates here. Do you?
No, probably not, because a lot of the guys didn't necessarily have their greatest year. You know, I think Nerlens Noel regressed a little bit last year, in large part because he was out of position. You know, I think Okafor, you would expect a year two bump in his play as he's a little more, you know, accustomed to the NBA game, and he has made that transition, including off the court and being ready to handle that. You know, I think a lot of the players
work out all summer. I mean, it's a little concerning. He had that knee surgery and then he's still having trouble with it. Is that just a little bit of a setback, or has he been kind of struggling with that the whole summer?
Yeah. So the way he described it was he was going up against Embiid on the final scrimmage of training camp, and he started feeling soreness after that. So it sounded like it was more an individual event than it was just never really recovering. So it seems like, yeah, he did have a little bit of a setback. He says that pain is gone, but yeah, I mean, he looks like physically he is in better shape. I think Brett Brown talked that his body fat percentage was down in the 8 or 9% range, which would be an improvement, but you know, getting back up to game speed again, because he hasn't been playing 5-on-5, because he hasn't been playing in preseason games, I think is going to take some time. But, you know, how much he worked out with basketball and on in terms of his moves, you know, I do think he was limited somewhat. He was with the USA select team, but he wasn't participating in those scrimmages. He didn't play in summer league. So he did miss some basketball activity over the summer.
Yeah. And then I think for Okafor, he's being a little bit unfairly maligned to me at this point in his career. At least, you know, if you were going to say, and obviously part of that is due to some of the character issues he had, getting in that fight at the nightclub, getting pulled over, going like a buck 10 on the freeway or whatever, or whatever it is you Easterners call a freeway. But
see a bridge. It was on a bridge.
But obviously the team was a massive disappointment last year, even given the low expectations. But after all that, if you look at what his statistics were on offense, and obviously he was really bad on defense too, like let's not forget that, but I think he exceeded expectations from an individual statistical standpoint on offense. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that is entirely. I mean, for him to come out and score 17 points on relatively decent efficiency, considering his usage and his age, I think that is certainly fair to say that he exceeded expectations in that regard. You know, a lot has been written about the team and how
he was much better shooting free throws too than
yeah.
He thought he would.
No, he was. I mean, he showed a little bit of a face-up game, not so much in terms of shooting, but ball handling and being able to take his man off the dribble. I think he showed that he can be a real force offensively. The question is, and one of the things that I was disappointed in was his passing, and there's a lot of chicken and egg in that, in the fact that these Sixers move off the ball. They really do a poor job moving off the ball, and I think this is something where their youth and inexperience comes into play, and I think this is where the poor spacing and the lack of shooting and lack of perimeter playmaking comes in as well. But he didn't create very much for his teammates, and I think there's reasonably high expectation that will improve over time. I thought he was pretty good at that at Duke, but defensively is really where the concerns to me come down. You know, like I said, Embiid played a cup of coffee in high school, 26 games at Kansas, took a 2.5-year layoff, and his instincts are worlds better than Okafor, who has been playing this game since really he can remember. And there's just, you know, a lot of people will say, look at the Sixers and look how bad they were, and you can't take anything from that. But, you know, I watched him at Duke. I watched him in the AAU circuit, at the shoe camps, at the FIBA events, and his defensive awareness has never really been his strong suit. And for me, he has to start showing some real improvement in that regard, because it's tough to build around even a really good scorer. It's tough to build around a center who really struggles on the defensive glass and who isn't making those rotations. And I think that's going to be the key for him going forward.
Yeah, and a lot of people have theorized that maybe off the bench is better for him. But, it's possible that he just develops into such a dominating scorer that you just have to play him. And dominating scorer in a way that it's not, you know, a Nikola Vucevic type, right, where, you know, he's doing it with jumpers, but where it's just, all right, he's just getting right to the rim and he's scoring really efficiently and you just can't deal with them, you know, with a lot of centers. You got a double team, and that's a different type of player where you actually can deal, I think, with his defensive deficiencies more than maybe like a Vucevic type, who is more of a volume scorer. You know, if Okafor can really get to be efficient, I think that's something that could be good. And I think what he was able to do on pick and rolls, ball handling, I mean, I think he could still be a fantastic offensive player. But I agree. I mean, obviously there are some structural difficulties with how he is defensively. He at least has that 7'5" wingspan, which, you know, maybe if he gets it, he can at least be more decent. Especially if he gets into more of a real team in the future. I mean, it could be one of those things where he doesn't figure it out until 24 or 25 when he, you know, gets picked up as a distressed asset by somebody. But I think he does at least have the physical talent to some degree. He's got quicker feet than you might think at his size. So there is some hope for him, but obviously the mental aspects are concerning. Another guy I wanted to ask you about, and we'll get to Noel too, but Rashawn Holmes is someone that I think can actually be pretty good. Like, I love what he can do getting up for alley-oops on offense. He's got an okay jumper that maybe could eventually stretch out to three, and he's an awesome shot blocker, but it just doesn't really have a path to playing time on this team. I mean, is there any sort of a plan for him, or are they going to trade him? I mean, I think he deserves to play somewhere, but maybe you disagree with that assessment.
Oh no, I think he's looked very good so far as preseason. One of the big areas that he showed improvement on at Bowling Green was on his jump shot. And I think that is, stylistically, it is not the world's prettiest shot. He's got a lot of weird sideways spin on it, but he has been making some progress mid-range. He's got a really soft touch on hooks and floaters in the lane. And he operates in the pick and roll really well, and he finishes at the rim really well. And he's an explosive athlete who can take some contact and still finish. You know, he's going to be a really interesting player to watch, because he does, again, have a little bit of two-way potential, not a star on either end, really. And I think his defense is right now probably more highlight driven than production. His rebounding was abysmal last year. I think it was in like the 12% range, just off the top of my head.
He goes after every block shot and leaves the glass open. But maybe that's something he could be trained out of, because when he's in position, I mean, in summer league, you know, guys just could not score on him at the rim, even if he wasn't blocking the shot.
He has quite a bit of potential there that has to be refined. And I think that's going to take some work still. But yeah, I think he's a very legitimate backup big man. And I think he should be getting minutes as a guy to develop. It's just tough when all of the Sixers' talent, quite literally, is focused on the two positions he plays. I mean, when you have Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, Ben Simmons, and Dario Saric at the power forward and center spots, it's hard to see a world where he gets the time that he, quite frankly, deserves. So maybe that makes you a little more willing to trade one or both of Noel or Okafor. Maybe even at a price that maybe you wouldn't have earlier. I think you can rely on Holmes to be that backup big man, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be real tough, and he's in a bad spot. And quite frankly, all of these guys, with the exception of Embiid's kind of the guy who you don't hurt Embiid's minutes to accommodate any of these guys. So I think he pretty much knows that he is a focal point going forward. But for the rest of these guys, it's going to be real interesting over the next couple of years. I mean, Noel has already stated that he doesn't think the three big men rotation was going to work. And it was kind of interesting, because right after Noel said, you know, I don't think this three center thing is going to work out, Brian Colangelo kind of well actuallyed him with, yeah, but it's actually four people because we have Rashawn Holmes, which I don't think really alleviated Nerlens Noel's concerns over playing. But and then you have, you know, Okafor, like you said, when we were talking about Okafor starting with Embiid, and it just doesn't, that's not a pairing that I think is going to work for major stretches. And then so is Okafor going to be okay playing 20 to 25 minutes off the bench? Is he okay with that long term? And I think it's one thing to be okay with it now, another thing when he's coming up on the final year of his rookie scale contract, and here's a guy who was had the pedigree to go to Duke, win a national championship, be a top three pick. Is he going to be okay with that long term? And I think that's, you start getting into the human element of this, and I think that's where it's going to get really difficult. And also just getting the minutes, like we said, to develop Rashawn and really evaluate what he can do, not only for 5 to 10 minutes bursts off the bench, but for 25 to 30 minutes as a guy you really rely upon.
Well, it's tough for them because if you could just snap your fingers and you knew Embiid could just play 35 minutes a night for the rest of his career, it's simple. You just trade Okafor, you trade Noel, and get some guys at other positions. But Embiid could suffer another foot injury. He could, something could happen this year where he's just never going to play again. And then all of a sudden, now you're looking at Okafor or even Noel as a guy that you really need. And Noel, it's just, it's tough because he's probably going to be looking for $20 million a year, at least in restricted free agency. They're not going to extend him, almost certainly, given those comments and the logjam at the center position. So what can you trade for him that they would want to get back? You know, there's not really that much there. But, you know, he's obviously not going to want to be there either. So it is a really difficult situation. And it all stems even, I mean, it was bad enough when it was Noel and Okafor together. But now with Embiid, it'd be great to be able to say, all right, he's our guy. But you just don't know that yet from a health standpoint.
Yeah. And I mean, I do agree with you that long term, if you have confidence in Embiid, you trade both of those centers, Noel and Okafor, and get a guy who really fits well next to them and really complements him and who will be happy in that role. And I think Rashawn's perfect because he would be happy in a backup role where maybe Noel and Okafor long term aren't. But when can you actually be confident in Embiid? And I'm not sure I can even give you an answer to that question.
Yeah, maybe, you know, after like two healthy years.
Maybe, right? But then, I mean,
at that point, you're extending him as well, right? You know, into restricted free agency.
It is a really difficult question to answer. And I'm not sure when, you know, at some point you're going to have to probably make a commitment that you're not really willing, you're not really confident in making, but at some point you do have to build a team. And I think they're going to approach that point soon.
All right. So let's talk about that team now. I think the most interesting part obviously is the prospects, and it's good. It's good that they just have some talent on the team now, which they really haven't. What do you see as some of like the playing time / lineup issues that Brett Brown is going to have to sort out of, other than obviously the center position and some of the other ones we've already talked about?
Yeah, I mean, I think the wing position is pretty well set, and that I think, you know, Henderson is going to start at the two, and then Covington is going to start at the three. And I think they're both
right, their best player, Robert Covington. Yeah. I forgot that guy.
You know, and I was excited for Covington because you look at his shot chart and he doesn't get anything. He gets less open jump shots than pretty much any other high volume jump shooter because the Sixers just have nobody that can create for him. And he ends up shooting from, you know, 27 feet out, contested threes, probably shots that you normally on a team that had actual half court offensive talent, you wouldn't want him taking. But there's just not, there's nobody to create open looks. And you looked at Ben Simmons, you said, hey, for the first time in Robert Covington's Sixers career, he might actually get some open looks and you could realistically evaluate what he can be going forward. But that's not going to be the case this year. But I think he is going to start. He's been a little bit streaky in the preseason, hasn't really looked like himself so far, but he has made some strides in his defense and defending the perimeter. And I think he's best used as a four, another guy with him and Jeremy Grant, who I think are playing slightly out of position, even if I think he can do it. But I think he is going to be, you know, the starter at the three and get a bulk of the minutes. Another major question they have is going to be Jeremy Grant. And Brett Brown has talked about Grant playing more small forward this year, which I think is born out of necessity more so than fit. But man, his jump shot, I mean, putting him on the perimeter at the three when really he has no gravity whatsoever is going to be very difficult. And for a team that is looking to operate in the post, you know, you worry about that. So I think his minutes are going to, I mean, he's a guy who's played major minutes for the Sixers over the past 2 years as part of the, you know, kind of tryout of young athletes who could see his minutes drop quite a bit.
Yeah, I guess we haven't talked yet about the player who led the team in minutes last year, and Jeremy Grant was second. Dallas Thompson. And is there a player there at all? I mean, he had a 9.2 PR, but nominally he shoots threes and he looks like he can defend okay. I mean, is there an NBA rotation player in there somewhere, or is he just playing out of necessity because they just didn't have anybody else?
Well, I mean, I think anytime you can hit an open three-point shot, you have a chance to make a roster and make a rotation. His defense is kind of hit or miss. He tends to overhelp quite a bit, but he does have decent enough physical tools to be, you know, a contributor defensively. He doesn't really do anything other than hit an open shot and play acceptable defense at times. He's not a guy who is going to create at all. He doesn't really move too much off the ball. And I think that's one thing that all the Sixers shooters, Hollis, Covington, all of those guys, I would like to see them use screens and hit a jump shot on the move a little bit more. But you're not going to put him in pick and roll situations. He doesn't handle the ball. He doesn't really rebound all that much. But yeah, I mean, anytime you can shoot 40% on threes and make a contested shot, you have a role in the league. So I think in that respect, he is. But I would have liked to have seen him really add something else to his game at a reliable level, and he just hasn't done it yet.
Yeah, and I think just athletically, he's probably at a little bit of a deficit. You know, maybe not so much on the defensive end, but in terms of being able to get to the basket or have any shake to his game at all. So I want to ask you this in two parts. The crunch time lineup that you think Brett Brown will go to, let's look at it pre-Simmons return first.
Well, I think it's going to be Embiid. And Brett did talk about using the Embiid Okafor lineup to close out games, which I'm not sure I really see. You know, I think it's something that he talked about because there was so much excitement about Okafor. But I think that what I would see as a crunch time lineup is Embiid and Sarge in the front court. And really pretty much a starting lineup. Covington, Henderson, and probably Bayless, although I could see TJ sneaking in because of his defense at the position. And again, TJ is not a great defender. He's certainly physically overmatched, but he, scheme wise, he will be in the right spots. He will make the right reads and he will give the effort. And I think Brett likes that.
Yeah. I mean, that is a rough shooting lineup though, with him, Henderson, Saric is probably going to be a little bit below average in the modern day as a power forward. So
there aren't many good shooting lineups you can throw out there.
Oh, by the way, Stauskas, is he just gonna, this, we don't want to spend too much time on it, but you think he's just gonna get his rookie option declined? I mean, that's kind of what I foresee based
on would be pretty stunned if his fourth year option was picked up. He just hasn't shown any real ability to, you know, it seems like with Stauskas, it's a confidence thing. And he talked a lot this preseason about being confident. I think he even mentioned a hypnotherapist at one point. And that confidence isn't there. The moment he misses a shot, the moment he gets beat defensively, it seems like he gets hesitant and nervous. And that jump shot you saw at Michigan, that ability to create off the dribble, it just hasn't been there. At this point, we're getting to such a large sample size in terms of three-point attempts and minutes that it would be pretty surprising to me if his option was picked up.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. So you mentioned Brown saying that he might play Okafor and Embiid together to close games. I don't think that's really going to work, but that brings me a little bit larger of a point here. I mean, this team, I said it when we did the over-unders, that they had the point differential of a lofty 16-win team despite their 10 wins a year ago, and a lot of that I chalked up to the fact that I thought that Brett Brown did not do a very good job down the end of games. And now perhaps he deserves some slack there, because when you're this bad, you're not going to be exactly like focusing on end-of-game situations. But is that a justifiable criticism for my part, or was the fact that they underperformed their point differential so much just more about bad luck last year?
It is, you know, Brett Brown has every excuse in the book. And it's, I mean, I'm not saying that he uses them. I'm saying that every excuse you could use is justifiable in this situation, from the lack of perimeter shot creation, the youth on the team, inexperience, changing roster. Like, it is, he's in a very, very tough spot. But by the same token, the offensive sets that we've seen, and especially late in games, have just not been very creative. There hasn't been a whole lot of movement. You don't see a lot of real offensive sets run. And he's talked about how he wants to put that into the hands of his players. And that doesn't really work with a team this young and inexperienced. And I think that was one area he was really going to lean on Simmons, who, while he might be young, is very accustomed to running an offense and kind of making plays on the fly. But yeah, I think that is it can be, both of those statements can be true. He can be in a very difficult spot, and he can also be not be making the most of it. And I think that's a very fair criticism.
And then what about when Simmons comes back? You think that he would just replace Saric as their crunch time lineup?
Yeah, and then I think Bayless would have a more definitive grasp on that point guard spot.
Yeah, no chance you think for Rodriguez to close games though? Are you just so down at him because the shooting's been so bad in the preseason?
No, I think there's a chance. I think just going based off of Brett and what he values, I think the defense late in games would probably be a difficult hurdle to overcome. I probably like Rodriguez more than I've let on in this podcast, especially on this team where they have nobody else to really create and nobody with any creativity. I think I said this earlier. I would start Bayless at this, or Rodriguez. I'm getting my names confused. Yeah. I would start Rodriguez at this point because I think he's a better fit with Embiid. But I think on what Brett will do, I think he'll want more of a defender at the point.
What are some of the strengths of this team as you see him going through the regular season?
You're asking about strengths on the team that just won 10 games. They're young. They have energy.
Right? Depth at center.
No, I mean, they have I think defensively, I think Embiid might be good enough defensively day one if he can stay on the court, both in terms of injury and foul trouble. I think you could, you know, I think a couple years ago, the Sixers were the 13th ranked defense based almost solely on having Nerlens Noel and a bunch of athletes. And I think you could see something again, maybe not to the 13th ranking, but, you know, last year, I think they dropped to about 25th or 26th. And I think on this podcast, I even noted that I was worried that they were losing their defensive identity to build a mediocre offense, and mediocre would have been much better than what they actually had. I think they can regain some of that defensive identity. I think Embiid can control the defensive glass from day one. I think he has a real presence about him defensively in that not even just block shots, but because he's 7'2", 275, 280 pounds and can move, I think he can dissuade drivers to the rim. And I think he can help regain that defensive identity. So I would say, you know, I think they can compete on the glass, and I think they can really get out and transition and run, and I think they should be a better defensive team this year.
I think it won't be true all the time, but especially when Simmons comes back, I think they can actually throw out some pretty good passing lineups, which they will need because the spacing probably won't be there. But between Simmons and Saric and Rodriguez, you have three guys who are excellent, excellent passers for their position. Now, they probably won't all play at the same time, but that's something to consider there. I think also that they can throw out some pretty darn good defensive lineups too. I think that they could be able to switch 2 through 4 pretty effectively, or you could even throw some lineups out without a traditional point guard as well, and maybe be able to switch 1 through 4, and that might be something that they could go to. But I agree. I mean, I think it's difficult to come up with things that are very clearly going to be true. Maybe finishing on the pick and roll. Like, they got a lot of good role men now on this team. I think between Holmes, Okafor, and Embiid, all those guys, Nerlens Noel can get up for some alley-oops. So they should have guys who can finish pick and rolls really well. That's part of why I'd like to see Rodriguez play a little bit more. And obviously Simmons as well. You know, if they're not going to switch that, they should be able to get some good points to the role man in the pick and roll, I think.
No, I think I think this team, the outlook of it and the style of it changes quite a bit once Simmons comes back. But I think a lot of these guys would serve better. I mean, I think even Rodriguez and Saric, one of the benefits they have is that they're really good, not only initiating the offense, but as kind of secondary guys, the guys who can make a quick decision and a creative look off of, you know, a guy like Simmons who has collapsed the defense. So I think they really need that one player who can really start that chain reaction defensively, and then they can start looking a lot more competent, and you can really start seeing some of that creativity and ball movement really shine. But I do think it's going to take some time, both because I think Ben Simmons needs to come back and because I think Embiid needs to start using that attention that he's seeing and really start kickstarting the offense with that. And I think that's the part where his 2.5 year layoff and just general newness to the game is probably having the biggest impact.
Do you think they're going to play at this fast pace that they've played at the last 3 years? I think that a lot of that was pushed by Sam Hinkie, who just believed that was a better way to get early offense. They shot a ton of threes. I mean, their shot distribution, if you just look at where they took their shots from, not accounting for who was taking them or how contested they were, is actually, you know, their expected points per shot was actually pretty good. I mean, are they going to stick with some of those philosophical elements from the Hinkie era, or are we going to move back to more of a traditional style now that Colangelo is in charge?
Yeah, they took a lot of really good shots that they had no chance of making. No, I think fast break and high tempo is something that Brett believes in as well. I think that was part of the reason that I think it's not so much that Sam, you know, went out and told Brett, this is how we're going to play. I think Sam hired a guy who shared his vision, at least in terms of up tempo. I think Brett wants to push the ball, not only to get transition opportunities and prevent getting in the half court, but also for cross matches and to be able to get Embiid deep post position to have an easier look at the rim. I think he believes in that. I think especially when Simmons comes back with, you know, both Embiid's ability to block a shot, Simmons being the elite defensive rebounder and ability to force turnovers at his position, you know, I think they're going to look to run quite a bit. And I don't really see that changing. And I think the only time it really could change is maybe when you have, you know, an Embiid Okafor pairing in the front court. But I think outside of that, they're going to run quite a bit.
Here's one thing I wanted to ask you about too, with Brett Brown. He, I thought, did a great job 2 years ago getting them up to that 12th or 13th or whatever it was in defensive rating. Other than that, hasn't done a ton, I think, other than just, you know, being a good soldier and staying upbeat amidst all the losing. But he got an extension that was basically done. And then a couple weeks later, it comes out that Colangelo basically was taking over, and Hinkie ended up being, you know, either resigning or being forced out. I think you know which of those I would look at. But is there a chance that they could move on from Brown, especially if things don't start that well? I get the impression, I think there was even some reporting to that effect, that he's not really the Colangelo's guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a great question, because I think when GMs come in, you see it a lot where they will change coaches and bring in their guys, even when coaches don't necessarily deserve it. And for a team that has lost at the volume the Sixers have, you know, it would be, on the one hand, it would be an easy sell because of Brett's record. On the other hand, I think Brett has, you know, won a lot of karma points around the NBA because of what he's gone through. But if they come out now and, you know, Colangelo went out, he got Bayless, he got Henderson, he got Rodriguez, he feels like he made moves that will improve the quality on the court. If they go out now and they start off 3-17, you know, is he still in Brett's corner? I think that's a great question. And everyone around the team will tell you that he is, that everybody realizes what this season is, especially now with Simmons being down. But can you stand up to that when, you know, people around the league and fans are out there with their pitchforks because they have another tanking season, quote unquote? I think that's going to be a great question, and something I hope we don't have to discuss in a couple months. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Brett doesn't have too many, you know, 1-19 starts left in him.
Yeah, well, it's for his sake, I hope he doesn't either.
And that's where the Simmons injury really hurts, because you just thought they weren't gonna win 35 games, but you thought this year would be different. And now you're looking at the beginning of the season and you're like, I don't know how this team is going to compete on a night-to-night basis. So you hope that they had so many opportunities last year where they blew games late, and you just hope they find a way to pull one or two of them out for Brett's sake.
Yeah, I don't know that Simmons really at this early point in his career. I think that just him looking good and just kind of Embiid looking good, even if they weren't winning games, could just be something that would have helped from a perception standpoint and from Brown's job security standpoint. I don't think that losing Simmons hurts them that much. Frankly, maybe we'll see, and especially because they have Saric, who's like somewhat similar in terms of wins and losses. I mean, it does hurt in terms of his development, in terms of the perception of the franchise, all that. I don't know. Do you think that Simmons actually would have been like a real effective player who would have helped them win games? Because I think he would have been really inefficient. He would have been bad on defense. And, you know, basically his only plus skill that I would have seen very early on would have probably been his passing.
Yeah, well, I think it's not only what Simmons can do, but who they have to replace him. And just the fact that there's no real shot creation. You know, I think we saw so many times last year where they lost games just because they didn't have somebody who could even really get them into an offense. Who the turnovers late in games, when teams would go, you know, oh bleep, we're losing the Sixers, and they would ratchet up their defense, they just didn't have the perimeter ball handlers to withstand that pressure. So I think it's not only that Simmons can create and that you look at what he could do for, you know, a big man like Embiid, but also just the fact they have no real viable alternative behind him. So I think that is, you know, you just look at the perimeter guys and you can't really think of one guy, whether it's because of athleticism or whether it's because of a lack of ball handling, who can really beat his man off the dribble on a consistent basis. And I think that, as much as anything, is why, I mean, we're not talking about a lot of wins, but if we're talking about the difference between 3-17 or 5-15, and maybe that's what keeps Brown his job. I hope they're not thinking in that way, but teams react so much to pressure that I worry that they will.
Yeah. So what do you think about these guys in terms of weaknesses? I mean, there are a lot of them, obviously, but what are some of the ones that really kind of stand out to you as things that are going to be difficult for them to overcome?
Shooting and turnovers. I think those are the two that probably keep me up.
Shooting and dribbling.
Yeah, shooting, dribbling, putting the ball in the basket. I think the shooting, floor spacing, and taking care of the basketball, and of course those are very intertwined. I think those, if I was a coach, those were the two that would keep me up the most at night. You know, shooting or turn turnovers are such a big factor, not only in your offensive productivity, but also in your defense and your ability to really get set and avoid mismatches and compete on that end. You know, if you're looking to build an identity, it's going to be really hard if they're leading the league in turnovers once again. And it looks like they very well could.
Yeah, I think they could be better defensively just because you have some real NBA players. And the other thing I think, too, that they could just be better on, kind of moving into the projection portion here, but they're going to have more just NBA players who aren't just like total replacement level flotsam type of guys. Like Stauskas is not going to play. Hollis Thompson probably won't play as much or will be in an appropriately limited role. It's not going to be, you know, TJ McConnell will probably be the third point guard once Bayless comes back. And he's actually not that bad, but then, you know, you're not going to have just guys who shouldn't be out there at all. Grant and another guy who's is going to be a deep rotation guy this year. So I think just in terms of they don't have any superstars, they still have a lot of weaknesses, but just not putting anybody out there who's absolutely awful, I think, is my biggest reason for optimism with these guys, certainly compared to last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be big. And I think from Sixers fans' perspective, and probably my perspective as somebody covering the team the last few years, just having somebody like Embiid out there where he might not be a consistent force, but you can see the development and a path to getting there. And I think that will keep the positivity around the team higher than it has been at any other point of this rebuild.
This is total speculation, but what do you think the chances are that Embiid gets hurt again with that foot or something related? I mean, no one knows the answer to this, but just to kind of, I mean, this is something that if you're running the Sixers, you have to think about. You know, you probably have better medical reports and maybe some studies, but what are the chances that he just gets hurt again and his career is just, you know, it never really takes off? Or, you know, what are the chances that he's past that? Just in your mind, ballparking, and this is totally unscientific, but it's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, it's really unknowable. I mean, it's even with healthy guys, Ben Simmons is a perfect example of this. He's never really had an injury in his basketball career, and you draft him and you think, okay, we have Embiid as this high upside gambit, and we have Simmons as kind of the reliable, never been injured, clean bill of health guy to fall back on. And now you're looking at it and Embiid's healthy and playing in every preseason game, and Simmons is on the mend. It's really an unknowable. You know, I do think that they are much more confident in where he is after the second surgery and the procedure they had done this time around than they did the first time. You know, I think you have to remember Embiid had that surgery initially before the Sixers drafted him. And I think where they are now, they're more comfortable projecting his future than they were when they drafted him, which I think is good considering he just took 2.5 years off. But it's really unknowable. I mean, it's feet in big men. It could go one of two ways. It could go, you know, obviously everyone brings up Yao Ming. It could go Zydrunas Ilgauskas too, who had, you know, I forget if it was 2 or 3 surgeries on his navicular bone and then played 10 straight seasons. It's really tough to know. But I do think there is reason to be optimistic, but it's anything could happen.
Yeah, in my mind, and again, this is totally unscientific, I'm just thinking maybe 60-65% chance that he is able to just have a normal career from here on out. You know, and I think I just, because of the history, I almost like don't want to allow myself to get too optimistic when you consider, you know, especially his size and all that stuff. So, but I mean, I think that's a decent chance. But again, you know, you've got that 30% chance, even if it's only a 20% chance, that's got to impact your thinking. All right. So best case scenario for these guys, where do you see them finishing in terms of wins?
You know, last year I came on this podcast and I took the over, and I forget what the over was, but I think it was like,
I want to say it was like 22 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And that obviously did not work out in my favor at all. And I think this year I was probably thinking 25 to 27 with Simmons. And I think I would probably say more like 21 or 22 now that he's out. And
so you think it's going to, if he misses half the year, you think that him being out is going to cost them, you know, five wins over a 40 game period?
Not him by himself. But I think, I don't know. I think part of that is also just being a little more measured because of what happened last year. It's hard for me to take the over and make that same mistake twice in a row. But I think they would have been able to Brett would have been able to take out a little bit more of his playbook with Simmons in the roster than he is now. And Brett has talked so much over the past 3 years about having to really dumb down his offense, not because his players are dumb, but because they're young and inexperienced and there's so much roster turnover. And I think he looked at it as he finally had the guy who could at least form the center of it, and he could start building more and getting pieces around to complement. And now I don't think they have that. So I think it's again, not just the loss of Simmons, but the absence of anything really remotely resembling replacement level who can really even fill in that same role. And I think their offense is just going to look so bad at the start of the season. And for a team that's been all training camp geared towards building around Simmons, I think they're going to be very slow now to start the season because of that. So maybe not 5 wins. Maybe his true value is more like 3 wins or, you know, 2 to 3 wins. But I think just the being so disorganized to start the season could account for a couple more.
I think they just, without Simmons, that they just need Rodriguez to play more and
they
just do. Hope that
and they need him to play well around.
Yeah, because like that's early. I think that he can be a totally adequate offensive point guard, and you know the defense is what the defense is, but if you're gonna have any chance on offense and the guy is a pick and roll maestro, I think that he actually can be really good. But you know, when you consider he's coming from Europe, he's only on a 1-year contract. Jared Bayless has the larger contract. I mean, I think especially with Simmons out, I think Rodriguez can help this team much more than Bayless would. But I'm a little skeptical that his shooting is going to come around, but I'm even more skeptical that just he's going to get the time. But he, to me, if they don't play him, you're right. I think the offense is just going to be horrendous. If they do play him, I think that they could at least be passable at times.
No, and I agree with you. And I mean, when Simmons went out, I pretty much said right away that I would start Rodriguez. But then when Bayless also went out and TJ McConnell was starting for quite a bit, I do question whether or not they're thinking along that line as well. And then you combine that with Rodriguez struggling quite a bit in the preseason. And both, I think the amount I would have played him is not going to be reached. And also his effectiveness, at least maybe to start the season, might not be as high as you want. So I agree long-term, he needs, not long-term, but throughout the season, he needs to get a significant bulk of the minutes and he needs to play well. I'm just not sure that's going to happen from day one.
Yeah, he could also be a trade candidate as well on that deal, which I think there are definitely some point guard needy teams that could use him.
How does that work? He would have a no trade then, right? He would be able to override that?
No. He can't be traded until December 15th. On a 1-year, the players that you're thinking of on a 1-year deal, that's if they're spending their second consecutive or third consecutive 1-year deal to where they would lose either early bird or bird rights if they were traded, and that's when they have the veto power. So
this is why I ask you.
and I mean, I think, frankly, if he could be traded already and didn't have to wait until December 15th, he might have already been traded. Who knows? But best case scenario for me with these guys is probably in the 25-26 range. Simmons comes back a little bit earlier, Embiid doesn't get hurt, continues to play well. The defense, you know, they run some good defensive lineups out there. What do you think about as a worst case scenario?
Probably high teens. You know, I don't see, and I said this last year, if you have a team that comes out and competes defensively, it's hard to lose too many games. Like, I think the Sixers have enough talent and enough NBA players where if Brett puts them in the right spots and they compete, it would be kind of shocking for me to see them win less than 16, 17, 18 games. I think that's a pretty low floor. But now if you're saying maybe they're ultra conservative with Simmons or he has a setback or Embiid isn't able to make it through a season, then obviously that could be lower. But I think if it goes below 18 wins, I would be really surprised because that is at the point where it approaches the dysfunction. And I think I would be a little surprised if this team was dysfunctional. But so much of this right now depends on what they do with the big men situation, whether or not Okafor and Noel will cause a problem with the roles that they have, whether or not they can clear that logjam and maybe spread that talent out a little bit more. But I think 18 wins is probably my low point.
And and Okafor has had some injuries. Noel it may even miss the start of the regular season with this groin issue. So maybe they'll just, and Embiid, they're going to rest him. So maybe that logjam will be eased slightly just due to some health concerns. All right. You want to give me your official prediction then for the record?
I'm going to go with 22. 22 sounds about right.
Yeah.
I'm also snake bitten because of last year. So,
well, it's a very interesting exercise in human psychology. And I think pretty much everyone that I have on goes with the over, and you're adjusting due to last year. But I think even people who are not that high on the team in general or guys that I look at as cynics, like, you know, like Jason Concepcion is probably one of the bigger cynics out there. But anyone who just follows a team or is close to them, I think it shows something about human psychology that you just naturally think that they're going to be better than, you know, they end up being. So I think, yeah, 22 is, I think, right about where I would be too. I think I'll go with that. I think some of the concerns that you've enumerated actually made me lower my prediction a little bit. I probably would have been 23 or 24 before that. So I think, where do you see them ranking, like, in offense and defense by points per possession?
Defense, I would probably say slightly below average, maybe like 17, 18.
And, oh, that good, huh?
What was that?
I said that good, huh?
Yeah, I think they can get back up, not all the way back up to where they were, but with Henderson being a little better than, you know, last year they were playing Stauskas a lot as a starting two guard. With Henderson being an upgrade there, with playing a little less two big sets, and that sounds weird, but I really think Brett wants to avoid that as much as he can. And I do think there is going to be a trade to move one of the two of Okafor and Noel relatively soon. And then Embiid's impact. I think they can improve. You know, I think they were like 25, 26 last year. I think they can improve up to like 18-ish. Offensively, if they cannot be last, I think that would be somewhat of a win. I think they're going to struggle quite a bit for the first half of the season, both with Simmons being out and also with turnovers.
Yeah, but even, you know, there's last and then there's like Sixers last in offense. Yes. The way they've been these last couple of years, right? Like, they're at least going to have NBA players at most of these positions now, to where they could, if they're last, they won't be like, you know, 3 points per 100 possessions worse than like the second worst team. You know,
they'll be normal last, not historically bad last.
I don't think they'll be last, actually. I think they might get to like maybe even like 28th or something like that. And even as a ceiling, maybe like 25, 24, depending on, again, when Simmons comes back, how much they play 3-point shooters at the four as well. I mean, just opening things up there with even someone who remotely has to be respected at the 3-point line just makes such a difference on what everyone else can do. I think defensively, yeah, they can bring out some pretty nice lineups. A lot of it really, I think, just depends on what happens with Okafor. If he's going to play 30 minutes a game at center or 25 minutes a game at center, they're probably going to be pretty bad during those minutes. If Embiid, and Embiid, you know, whether I think he's going to show some flashes, but I don't know that just as a rookie, it's hard. Reasonable to expect him to be a positive defensive presence relative to just your average center. So even with him in there, I look at that position as maybe a little below average. But then, you know, you've got Henderson and Covington are decent guys on the wings. McConnell, I think, is a good defensive point guard. Even if he is a little overmatched athletically, he'll compete at point guard. It's not as much about just defending your guy one-on-one in an ISO as it is competing, getting over screens and executing. I would say probably more like 23, 22, 21 for their defense just because of all the youth. But there is definitely more talent than there was last year, if not 2 years ago.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is fair. And like I said, that 18th is kind of dependent on them resolving the logjam, playing less two big sets. And I think I probably have Embiid as a slightly higher defender than you do at this point, even with his inexperience.
Yeah, certainly watching him subjectively, he looks pretty good. I'm more regressing it back to the fact that, you know, he's just a rookie and rookie big men just aren't good on offense. You know,
that's fair.
That's kind of what I'm going with there. All right, well, what do you have to plug before we go here?
I mean, we're all kinds of stuff going on. Obviously, Philadelphia Magazine is where I cover the Sixers, doing a lot of NBA draft previews for Draft Express, but easiest way is just at Derek Bodner NBA.
Who do you guys have for number one right now at DX for 2017?
That's a good question.
I think it's Markelle Fultz, right?
I think it is. I know Jackson's been there quite a bit. It is Fultz. I know I personally have Fultz number one. I like Jackson number two, and I think Harry Giles, just sheer talent and completely ignoring the very real injury concerns. You know, I think he is probably, I might even have him as a second rated talent in this draft. You just hope he can stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you could see somewhat of a 2014 Embiid situation with him, where even if he looks really good, he might drop down to not being the number one pick, and then you'll get to. I mean, it's interesting, especially because it looks like a team like Boston is going to be near the top of the draft again with that Brooklyn pick, since they sort of have so many more bullets in the chamber that maybe they would go with that upside play with some someone like him. But yeah, all right, we're
also him. Yeah. Him in Boston scheme. I think that would be he's a really mobile big man, and I think he would be really good in Brad Stevens' scheme. But you're right, that is a completely different podcast.
All right, well, thanks for coming on. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Duncan NBA, and we'll be back shortly with more in our season outlook series.